organizations. It's hosted by Jane Herring, a former marketing manager at Gateway Technical College, Jenny Tunkies, former reporter for the Kenosha News, and a former chief of staff for the Kenosha County Executive, Marcia Connett, who is a Southeast Regional Consultant for Wisconsin Literacy, and she provides literacy education support and management expertise, and Xander Miller, a librarian at the Kenosha Public Library, who also works on technology and digital skills. Community Matters also shares its time slot with the 30-time award-winning WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Hi, and welcome to Community Matters. I'm Jane Herring, and I'm really looking forward to the program today. We're going to be learning all things Hawthorne Hollow Nature Sanctuary and Arboretum, and we're going to be talking today with DJ Levique, who is the executive director, and Kaylin Palomares, who is the naturalist. And welcome to the program today.
Thanks, Jane. Thanks.
What I had been saying to you beforehand, and I believe it is true, except for those who come out all the time, is that you know one aspect of Hawthorne Hollow, or you were there 10 years ago, and you knew Hawthorne Hollow, and you knew what it was like. But I think today you are doing so much more, and you've grown, and you've cultivated certain areas into something much more, and I'm hoping to learn all about that. One of the big burning questions I have, and it's sort of an overall question, is the average person who is driving down Green Bay Road, they see the sign, when can they come and just hang out?
Well, we are open almost every day of the week. The only day we're closed is Mondays. So we're open Tuesdays through Sundays, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. We do close down for the winter. You know, snow is kind of a big issue by us. So it is December 24th, Christmas Eve, all the way till March 1st. And March 1st opens up, and we start maple sugaring right away. We tap over 100 trees, and we get that going, and it's our favorite time of the year.
Oh, I bet that's exciting. Plus, a whole new year, all new excitement. So people can just come, they can park in the parking lot and go hiking around anytime between those hours?
Yes, we're free and open to the public. Since we are a nonprofit organization, we do have donation boxes out. We'll be glad to accept donations. But yeah, we've got over, Kaylin, we have over 4 miles of trails, right?
Yeah, we have just under 5 miles of trails now. We just recently opened up about 2.5 miles more on July 15th, so that's very, very exciting.
Yes.
And with those new trails comes a lot of new like habitats and different structures that we don't have anywhere else on the property. So it's a really new and exciting area for us. And so if anybody has a chance to come out, we highly recommend checking out those new trails. And if you've never been there, you know, going and discovering the old trails, the existing trails, because there's always something different to see anytime you go.
And we'll be talking in greater detail about the trails and whether there are maps and that sort of thing. But my second burning question, and it's completely all about me, is are dogs allowed?
Yeah, we get that question a lot since we're a nature center.
Right.
We don't allow dogs. There's a certain things, you know, recreation, dogs,
sure.
Picnics, only because it could disrupt the, you know, the natural process out there. And, you know, there's always dog poop to consider,
oh,
you know,
of course.
but yeah, since we're a nature center, whenever people come with their dogs, thank them for coming and ask them to politely go across the street to pets where,
oh, you know, yeah. Plenty of dogs to be
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, I think it's just good to know so people are prepared. Mm. Okay. Now let's get back to really an overall vision of what Hawthorne Hollow is. I know that you are, is it the Hyslop? Is I'm pronouncing
that's
that correct?
That's right. Yeah, the Hyslop Foundation.
What is that and how did that get started?
Well, I've got a story for you.
Good.
Yeah. So in 1963, well, you're probably familiar with Barden's department store downtown
sure.
Kenosha. So H. Chris Hyslop, that was his store.
Oh.
And, you know, he was looking to start a foundation to give back to the community in some sort of way. So he did. He started the Hyslop Foundation back in 63 or 64. And then was kind of shopping around looking for a purpose for it when he met with Ruth and Margaret Teuscher. Those are the sisters that bought the property way back in 1935.
Oh.
So when they met and they had this discussion for years to kind of see how this would work, and they really liked each other. They got along and they had all these grand plans, it kindly finally came to fruition in 1967. The property was deeded over to the Heisel Foundation. So now, and we opened up to the public in 1970. So now we've been owned and operated by the Heisel Foundation since 1967.
So is that, could that be considered your primary funding source? Donations go into the Heisel Foundation? Is that how it works?
Yes. So since we are a nonprofit, we get our revenue or donations, our revenue through donations, grants, and
sponsorships
through events. And
makes total sense. Yes.
But we also
a lot of hard work to get that money.
It is. Yes. It's what we do. We really appreciate the how generous the community has been. We also have, we can go into more later if you'd like, but the Friends of Hawthorne Hollow is a second board that we have. And that's more of a support board that we really rely on for volunteering and guidance. They're great stakeholders, and we really appreciate the Friends of Hawthorne Hollow as well. They're great supporters, and they have been for decades.
I remember seeing that always on your newsletters and whatever. Okay, so we have a little bit of an idea about how it got started. And I think when it got started, there were some buildings on the property, correct? Both the house and then did the schoolhouse that you have, did that exist on the property or was that brought in?
So when the sisters bought the property, there was no buildings on there.
Oh, none.
They built the stables, the horse stables, which is now our nature center, and their house, which is now our administrative office, the Toysher House. They built those back in the 1950s. And then in the late 60s, after the property was deeded over to the Heisel Foundation, the three historic buildings, the 1847 One Room Schoolhouse, the original Pike River Schoolhouse, was moved over. And then the second Pike River Schoolhouse, the 1906 Pike River Schoolhouse, was moved over. And then the town hall, the 1858 town hall, was moved over.
Wow. And is that open for those people who would come in, they just want to hike around on those nature trails, and then they can just walk through the building?
They can, yes. Yeah. So right now, the town hall is currently closed for some work that's being done on it, but both the schoolhouses right at this moment are open, and you can walk through there. There's pictures in there. There's desks that you can kind of see how school would have been for a student in those years. And we also do field trips in the 1906 schoolhouse with the Kenosha History Center. They take in mostly third graders from the area, and they dress to the time. They dress like it's 1906, and they spend a day in the schoolhouse as if it's 1906. And it's the kids love it, and they always come out being like, we didn't even have Wi-Fi all day. It's crazy. So it's a really fun one, and it kind of puts things into perspective for the kids. And even chaperones and teachers, the teachers really enjoy it too.
Oh, I would think.
Yeah.
How many school groups come through in a given year, and are they all local? Or?
Ooh, that's a hard one.
Well, I'm not looking
it
for
varies.
A specific
yeah,
number.
Yeah, yeah,
but,
it varies.
Yeah.
All the programs that we carry throughout the year, it varies a lot. But our maple sugaring is definitely our most busy season and the most groups that we have. During the month of March, I could have – I think this year I had at the most four groups going at once during a 2-hour program. And so each group is about 20 to 25 kids. So within the month, I have hundreds and hundreds of students and teachers and chaperones coming in. And that's not including, like, we have adult and family courses as well. So people come on the weekends and do basically the same program with their families, and it's a little bit more steered towards the adults. So it's really – I would have to sit down and do some adding, subtracting, multiplying, but easily thousands of kids in the school year. So, or in the entire year.
What a fabulous opportunity. And the schoolhouses are kind of way in back in the far, west side? Is that the?
Yeah.
Yep, right in the far west side. They were originally moved there right along the road. They moved them down the road and then down the farm field next to our neighbors, the Paldas, and just installed right there. And
dropped them down and ready to go. No, I just think that's such a cool opportunity for kids, whether they're local or, you know, from Milwaukee, from mm-hmm. Illinois, whatever, to be able to experience. I know when I was in there, you really do get a feel for what it was like in a one-room schoolhouse, yeah. for sure. Okay, so yeah, you got trails. And you've got a nature center. You've kind of mentioned that. And we've got the schoolhouses. What else is on the property in just general terms?
Well, this year, in the last 2 years, we have some new structures that we were able to fund and put up. Really exciting structures. This year, we have the Overlook in Margaret's Garden. Margaret being one of the sisters, Ruth and Margaret.
Oh, yeah.
Margaret created this amazing, beautiful garden back in the 50s and 60s. And it's still there today. And we had a master plan back in 2012. And on that master plan was some sort of overlook looking into the hollow. Mm. And finally, you know, over 10 years later, it arrived.
That's fabulous.
And this is – so it's called the Thursday Morning Club Overlook. It has a cover over it, and it cantilevers off over the hill that goes down into the hollow. So visitors are welcome to come out into it and get a different perspective of the hollow. You're actually walking out into the canopy. And we're looking forward to using that in different field trips, possible rental uses for weddings. Oh. And, yeah, I think the visitors are really going to like that. Another new
Go right ahead.
Another new feature that Caitlin was alluding to earlier is the boardwalk. We have a new boardwalk and those new trails, a 250-foot boardwalk that was put in last summer that visitors are now enjoying every day. We go back there and they're back here. It's working.
And it's beautiful. Like, that's my favorite place at Hawthorne Hollow now. I love to just even just sit out there and just study what's around. There's tons of wildlife in that area because it's a wetland. So you get lots of birds. You get lots of, I mean, I've seen baby fawns out there, deer. So it's a really beautiful place. It's very serene. It's kind of the farthest out you can go on any of our trails at this point. It's close to the farthest. And that boardwalk, it's a beautiful, like, orangey color, and it winds through. It's just, oh, I love it.
It sounds very cool. And when you said boardwalk, I know you have a lot of trails on the ground. Mm-hmm. So I assumed it was wetlands.
Yeah, it's kind of like a big bridge, really, because sometimes you see a boardwalk and it's just planks,
right.
you know, on like a trail. But this is, we can fit a golf cart on it. It's wide enough that we can drive a golf cart on it. And
for maintenance, that's a good thing.
Yes, it is. We do a lot of work.
Up over the wetland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
No, in a day, like, we've had a boatload of rain, finally, the last couple of days. But it doesn't get submerged. It's up high enough.
No,
it's very high. Now, this wetland, it's the way that it was designed when it was restored is that it's keeping water from reaching the river and eroding the river. And so in the springtime when we have snowmelt and rain happening at the same time, maybe the ground's not completely thawed out yet, a lot of water is held in there. We call it Lake Lori. So Lori being our retired ecologist at Hawthorne.
Sweet.
And so in the early spring, it looks like a lake. It looks like you're on a pond. And I believe that the boardwalk was designed in a way that if it does get too high, it will kind of raise a little bit. But I don't necessarily, the way that it's built, I can't see it needing that or needing to adjust at all because it is high enough.
Cool.
It's not a permanent, how do I say, it's not a year-round pond or lake or something. It kind of dries out as you go throughout the year, especially with the drought that we've had. So it's really, right now it's holding a little bit of water because of, again, all the rain that we've had. But the point of it is to let it kind of go down into the, groundwater before it reaches the river.
Which is super. Mm-hmm. Okay, and so we have that. I'm waiting to hear observatory.
Oh, the observatory.
That is like, what? I didn't know you had that.
Yeah, back in 2016, Charles and Catherine Heide generously donated funds to build an observatory. You know, Chuck Heide's, one of his passions was, astronomy and the stars. And he graciously funded us a big donation to build an observatory right there in our arboretum. And just last year, we installed one of the biggest public telescopes from Chicago to Milwaukee. Mm. So we're really, really excited to start using that. We've been using it all year. And the observatory, maybe Caitlin can speak on this more, but the observatory has different programs throughout the week.
Yeah, so something that people don't always realize with Hawthorne Hollow is that there's stuff going on constantly. Whether you necessarily see it or not, there is field trips going on all the time, and then the observatory. So that's at nighttime, so people don't really think about it. But several days a week, the observatory has programming. Some of them are based more around planets. Some of them are based more around the stars. We do a Wine Wednesdays, which, of course, if it has wine in the name, people love that. It's kind of it becomes a date night situation a lot of the times, but it doesn't have to be. And then Fridays, there's a kids program, Small Eyes Under the Skies. And so different opportunities for people of all ages to come out and learn about the universe pretty much. So there's not a lot of opportunity for that in this like area. And no, so it's anymore. It's a very unique opportunity for people. So whenever people learn that we have them, that we have the observatory, they are, whoa, that's great. I didn't know that we had that. That's really cool. I need to come out for one of those. So I very highly recommend coming out for something like that, too.
And it does sound like the programming is every week. It's not like we have one event this month.
Yeah, it is ongoing, weather dependent. So, contrary to some belief, you can't see with a telescope if there's clouds. It can't see through the telescope. So that kind of messes things up a bit for us when we have a lot of this rain. And of course, it always rains on the day of the programs. But the way that works is if you get tickets for it and it ends up having to be rescheduled, like you can just move your ticket to the next program, come a different day. We also do like special events and things. So we just had a meteor shower this last weekend. Yeah. And it was perfect because it was like the peak was on a Saturday night. Or Friday and Saturday. And Saturday was beautiful. And we saw quite a few meteors or shooting stars. And it was kind of very magical. So
how does that work? Do you have everybody come up to the telescope individually, or is it projected?
It depends on the program, but yes, everybody takes turns at the telescope. It's not a lot of people think of like a planetarium, which is like when you sit in a dome and there's things projected on a screen above you. An observatory is just a place with a big telescope. So everybody kind of lines up and they take turns looking through the telescope depending on what we're looking at. But for things like meteor showers, we actually have zero gravity chairs, which are like the ones you can lean back in and kind of look up comfortably at the sky, because you can't really catch a meteor in a telescope fast enough, but you can see them with your naked eye. So
you have it's not just the telescope sticking out. It has a dome that opens.
Yes, and there's a paved area outside of the observatory. That's where we kind of set the chairs out.
Oh, cool.
So you have a full view of the sky, and it's really awesome too because there's trees kind of bordering your view. So it's like you're in this dome of tree. It's really magical out there sometimes.
I would think. And then get some wildlife moving through. That would be fun as well.
There was a deer out last night at the dome. When I pulled up, there was one out just eating in the arboretum, and we were using binoculars to look at it, and it wasn't getting spooked or anything. So
that's cool.
It's really awesome.
I should say this dome, you mentioned it moves. So it opens and closes, but also moves around.
Oh.
So that telescope inside of there, Dr. Parker and Chad Dr. Parker is the director of the observatory, and Chad is the program manager, and they can just go over and pretty much type in coordinates for a certain constellation or a star, and it automatically goes there, and then the dome, catches up with it, and it's there.
Just type Jupiter, and it'll go whoop, and it'll go right to it, and then we just move the dome to match up with it, and it's there. It's amazing.
It's fun being a part of that.
Yeah.
I would think. Now, I'm totally ignorant about powers of whatever, but how powerful is this telescope?
Oh, it's
very powerful.
It is.
Top of the line.
I don't know the magnification, but it is brand new. So, yes, it is top of the line. And as he said, it's the largest public viewing telescope in southeastern Wisconsin that we know of.
I've looked through it. You know, it's Saturn. Saturn. You can see the rings
of Saturn. Yes, you can see the definition. You can see the moons next to Saturn.
It feels like you're on the moon.
Oh, it looks fake. It looks fake sometimes, yeah.
I would think, because we're so used to seeing photographs.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I guess those photographs aren't lying, right?
Yeah, exactly.
No, that sounds very cool. What am I forgetting? What else is on the property? We haven't talked much about the Nature Center and what's in it.
The Nature Center is more of kind of a meeting space at this time. It's my dream to turn the Nature Center into a more interactive space where the public can come in and see education animals or exhibits and things like that. But at this time, it's not that. It was transformed from a horse stable into what it is now, so it's a very small space. So right now, we kind of use it for rentals and for special events, and we have our Two Sisters Boutique out there as well, where people, it's like a gift shop where people can come and get t-shirts and finger puppets and all the fun things you can get at a nature center. But
that's where you have that breakfast around, is it Mother's Day?
Oh, so.
Or is that a different building?
Well, so that was the Birds and Breakfast, the Friends of Hawthorne Health fundraiser. And, you know, COVID changed a lot of things. And one of the things that COVID changed was, you know, serving food. And and we went pivoted to a, they went and pivoted to a plant sale. It's 3 years of plant sales now. Very successful fundraiser. You know, people love coming out for their awesome native plants in the springtime, you know.
Oh, for sure.
And we have live music usually, and we haven't abandoned the food aspect. You know, I think last year we had crepes. And it was 2 years ago we had crepes. And but we're going to – I think they're talking about slowly reintroducing the breakfast part
of
it.
But I know the challenges. It's tough unless you bring in an outside vendor who's licensed and blah, blah, blah.
Yes, that's all that.
I will also say that the observatory does a Planets and Pancakes event now. So to kind of fill in that gap, that need of pancakes and to eat it with our maple syrup. So Planets and Pancakes happens, I think this year it was in June, and people come at like 3 a.m.
Of course they do.
It's very early, and it's because the planets, they are all visible at that time in the sky, at that time of year and at that time of night. And so you can view almost all of the planets through the telescope, and then once the light starts to come up, then we go in and we eat planet-shaped pancakes with our maple syrup. So
aren't all pancakes shaped like planets?
Yeah. Not if they're not pink with rings on them.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. We get some very creative pancakes. Volunteers helping us make those pancakes, and myself included. So
that's pretty cool.
But so yeah, we've tried to kind of fill that niche with a different program since we're not really doing the birds and breakfast anymore. We're still doing a pancake and maple syrup aspect. So.
Well, and I keep letting us get past talking about maple syruping.
Maple sugaring. We usually call it that.
Yes, I know that's syruping, what it's called. But
syruping's not wrong.
I like syruping. Yeah, no.
It's not
anyway,
wrong.
It sounds like that's a big part of kicking off your season.
Very much so.
Yeah, we've got this program called It's Maple Sugaring Time! !
Okay, then.
And it's a very fun field trip. The whole season, we recruit volunteers to come help us, you know, collect all the sap from all of the hundred trees that we tap, and we bring that sap back to the sugar shack. We boil that sap, and all the water evaporates out, leaving the sugars behind. We bottle it up, and it's one of our big fundraisers, selling these bottles of syrup made right here in Summers or in Kenosha.
And that is cool. I know I see some neighbors do that with their maple trees.
It's fun.
And it sounds like a lot of work, though.
It is.
But one of the best parts about it, you know, it's that long winter, you know, we're hitting the ground running with this. And by the time, you know, it's all the month of March. And by the time it's done, the maple sugaring season is wrapped up. It's spring. You know, all the flowers are starting to pop out and the leaves are starting to pop out. So it just, the month of March flies by.
Right,
it accelerates that last little part of winter.
So plant life. on the at Hawthorne Hollow. We talked about you have a lot of different things along the trails, and I'd like to talk about that. I've also heard that you have a farm manager. That leads me to believe you have a farm.
We do.
So tell me about that first, and then let's talk about the kinds of plant life we can see throughout the area.
Well, back in 2016 was a big year for us.
We acquired
the observatory, the Heidi Observatory, and then we also expanded. We've always been 40 acres, and then 2016 we acquired the property adjacent south to us. It's 50 acres from Green Bay Road all the way back to the railroad tracks. And the very front part of that along Green Bay Road has an old horse barn. So that is decided, you know, maybe we should put our heritage farmstead here. And now it's been going on since 2016. In this area we have chickens, we have bees, we have a honey house, and we have all sorts of plots of a variety of plants, vegetables, fruit. We have an apple orchard. We have a labyrinth made of – we change it up every year. This year it's the sunflower labyrinth. In the past it was the popcorn labyrinth or just the corn labyrinth. And
that's
this year
cool.
It's really neat looking. Yeah, it's fun to go over there and check things out. We also have over there these interactive stations. One's a mud kitchen where, you know, little ones, children can come and kind of play with the kitchen, acting like they're making things sometimes out of, you know, sticks or pine cones or mud. We also have a sound station, you know, with a different bells and whistles to make sound with. It's fun to get out there. And then there's a weather station tells you, you know,
how much it's rained.
The rain, the temperature,
the wind speed.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a fun little part. And also the Heritage Farmstead is kind of the purpose of it is to facilitate this program that we have, the Growing Healthy program, in which Caitlin will talk about this. But all of Racine's for the first graders in Racine, they're all funded to go on this field trip that we partner with Eco Justice for.
Oh, yeah, cool.
Yeah, so through grants that we receive through the Racine Community Foundation and SC Johnson, we are able to put on these awesome, awesome field trips where, like he said, all the first graders are able to come and the busing is free, the field trip is free, and they get to come out, they get to learn about eating healthy and where their food comes from, how digestion works. They learn about organic gardening, they learn about our bees and our chickens, composting, and it's a lot of fun. They get to try vegetables from the garden or maybe things that they've never tried before, and usually they get to try some of our honey as well. So it's a really fun program, and so the farm's kind of biggest purpose is to lead those programs. So we think it's important to kind of make sure that kids know where their food comes from and how to eat healthy, because I feel like that gets kind of lost in this, like, kind of age, I guess, that we're in. It's a really great.
I mean, it doesn't come from the drive-thru. Is that what you're
trying
to tell me?
Well, right, exactly. You know, some of them have never seen a garden, or they've never been to a farm, or they didn't know that carrots grew underground and things like that. So it's really cool to run those programs. And so that goes from usually like end of September through October with RUSD first graders. And like he said, we collaborate with the Eco Justice Center, which is on the north side of Racine or Caledonia. So they take half of RUSD first graders up there, the ones that are closer to them, and then we take the more southern schools by us.
So, oh, great opportunity.
Yes.
And to make that all possible, our farm manager, Caitlin, she has a group of – it's complicated.
Yeah, it's Caitlin and Caitlin. Okay.
Yeah. she has staff. She has this organic outreach staff, which is a program that was established, you know, back in 2016 when the Heritage Farmstead first was developed. And her and her staff just make the farm beautiful every day. They're out there planting all the plants. And a lot of these plants are donated from different, you know, like Milligers and Gateway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's right, yeah. So we really appreciate our partnerships in the community. This organic outreach group right now consists of four high school students.
Mm-hmm.
Really, the goal of that is to get these high school students out there and give them a really good first job experience. You know, make it fun for them, but also get those expectations of punctuality and work ethic in there. And, you know, it's just a really good experience for someone, a high school student that may not, you know, have, you know, been in nature before. And they get to work with bees, all these sort of like, you know, my first job was at Walgreens.
Yeah, I know. It just sounds like it. And because of the way things are going, it really is leading to a career, because there are more careers in this area. It's becoming such a thing, and entrepreneurship. Like I say, you've really grown in these past number of years, and this sounds so huge. And trying to manage it and get them, frankly, getting all the donations in, it's got to be a challenge. I want to take a short amount of time because there's so many things to do on the property. But tell me about the business side of it and managing all these different supported programs through grants. And yet you, I know you're out there shoveling this morning, you yeah. said. I mean, okay, you're shoveling and you're... shoveling the books too.
Yeah, there's tough. Definitely the administrative side of it is always has to get done.
So, as much fun as that can be.
Yeah. I started back as the grounds curator, you know, mm-hmm. and now I'm, you know, in the office most of the day. I try to get out and, like, you know, rake. And yesterday we were out pulling invasives in the new wetlands. But yeah, there's always that that really getting the support. Getting the support from the community through, right now we're getting ready for our Walk in the Woods Art Fair, our 31st yeah. annual Walk in the Woods Art Fair. So
amazing.
We're finding those generous major supporters and all the other supporters for that awesome event. Right around the corner is the annual fund drive. That's our big campaign to we send a mailing out, kind of, you know, how are we doing, what we did this year, and it's our plea. We rely so much on the community, and they really come through for us. We live in a generous community.
That is for sure, and I think the more they understand about all that you're providing, oh my gosh, it really is an eye opener. I had promised we'd come back and talk about all the cool plant life along the trails. And I guess, first, is there anything really unusual, or is it considered unusual because we just don't have a lot of opportunities to see it?
Both, I would say. I think the first thing that comes to my mind is we have a fen on property. So a fen is a type of habitat that is considered threatened in Wisconsin, so it's on some list of like protected area. Fen is just it's a very specific wet marshy type of area. It has very specific plant life there. So in our fen, we have a lot of skunk cabbage. So if you hear the name of that, it's exactly what it sounds like. It looks like cabbage and it smells like skunk.
How attractive, yes.
Yes, but it's a really cool, very alien-like plant. And I try to show kids whenever I can what they look like, because they are the first thing to pop up in the very early spring when there's still snow on the ground. They can actually, with thermogenesis, big words, they can actually heat themselves up to melt the snow around themselves so that they can grow through the snow. So they have these really weird alien-like flowers, petals, and then when the spring goes on, it gets warmer, they lose that, and it just looks like a huge cabbage plant. And so the fen is just covered in these huge green leaves, and it always has a little bit of a skunky smell over there, and it's not skunk, it's just skunk
Thank
cabbage.
Goodness.
So, yeah. So that's kind of one of the most unique things. And, like, you can find skunk cabbage in other places too, but that's kind of the most interesting plant that I think of right away. So
that would probably be coming out in what, early March?
March, yeah. I would say mid to late March, but it depends on the weather.
Yeah, for
but
sure.
When we're maple sugaring is when they start to pop out, so sometime in the month of March. But otherwise, I mean, we have so many – I mean, spring ephemerals in general, so – The flowers that are popping up the first thing in the spring, the first ones to provide nectar sources for our pollinators, they are mostly woodland plants, and so they're in the shade, they're under the forest canopy, or if there even is a canopy yet at that time of year. And so those are really, really unique too, because a lot of them are very dainty and things that don't look like your summer plants at all. So we have things like trillium, which takes years to even go from seed to plant. So like if you have trillium on your property or something, you're very lucky to have that. But also our trout lilies, and we've got lots of Virginia bluebells, and just all very gorgeous spring ephemerals. So if you have a chance to come in the spring, but any time of year, there's going to be some type of native wildflower that's blooming that is just gorgeous. So,
but it does sound like a good way to greet the season is to come out in spring.
Absolutely, yes.
So, again, you've got that sort of trail, but do you do guided trips too so people know what they're seeing, or do you have something in print for people who just come onto the property?
We do have visitor guides for everybody. We have maps. We have a giant, huge map for people to look at and maybe take a picture of with their phone too when they come. We do offer guided hikes if people call and you know, set something up. I do night hikes, which I just had one last night. So that's a whole different perspective than if you're here during the day. So we do have those types. We have wildflower walks. We have pollinator walks. So if you're ever looking to learn about something specific or just get a general tour, look on our website or like let us know, and we'd be happy to show you around. And, you know, we've done our fair share of all of us staff of showing people around and kind of explaining what things are. And we love doing it. So.
And we haven't talked about a word that is in your title, and that's arboretum. Mm. So you got a bunch of trees, and I think most of them are marked, if I remember correctly, at least some.
I don't know if I would say most.
Okay, that's probably
but
saying
here's
a lot
the thing.
In the woods.
So this year, I was able to get a grant through the We Energies Foundation to revitalize our arboretum. So we hired two arborists this summer. Gavin and Matt, and they worked really hard to identify what trees we have in the arboretum currently, to do tree work, do some pruning. We had to take some trees down, make trails safe for our grand opening that we had in July. And so we also just planted 6 new trees last week. So it's been a lot of work that they've done. But as far as the arboretum specifically, now we have a updated tree list that we're getting new plant ID markers for. We're also getting some educational signage for the arboretum as well. So on top of knowing, okay, that is a black cherry tree and this is the scientific name, and I know that because there's a sign now, but there's also going to be the educational signage, which is like, why are trees important? How do trees work? How does the sap work? What is this? How does chlorophyll work? You know, and so having those sort of signs throughout, I'm hoping will make the arboretum a more interactive place. Because right now, when you see it, you see the observatory, and that's kind of the main point, and there's trees around it. But unless you know that it's actually like a museum of hundreds of different species of trees, unless you know that already, you're just like, oh, there's a bunch of trees out there.
They're so pretty, but.
Yeah, so the goal is to get people actually walking out there and learning about the different species of trees, how to tell the difference between this tree, and the importance of them too. So, yeah.
So I should say a little bit of the history of this arboretum here. We've got a connection with the Morton Arboretum in Chicago, mm-hmm. very renowned arboretum.
Yes.
And Clarence Gottschall, who was the director of there and did a lot of design there, came up in the 60s and met with Ruth and Margaret and designed our unique arboretum. It's a unique arboretum because it's a landscape arboretum. You can sit at one part of the arboretum and look across and see the shape and the structure of the tree
on the
other side of the arboretum.
Oh, wow.
That was his goal there. So our kind of claim to fame is that. And I should mention that, because I know she's listening, Sandy and Judy had an effort, maybe 15, 20 years ago, of going through and making these labels for a lot of the trees around there. And since then, you know, a lot of trees have been replaced. And
sure.
So that's where Caitlin's project comes into play.
Or the little aluminum tags that were put on there are like up here, and we would, or
oh,
they're
yes.
just missing, or whatever
sure.
it would be. So it needed some updating and some revitalization. So we're really thankful that we had the opportunity to do that this year. And so by the end of the year, we are, fingers crossed, we should be a certified arboretum through ArbNet, which is kind of a network of arboretum that is also run by the Morton Arboretum. So they have this kind of database of arboreta from around the world. Mm-hmm. And if you fit these certain criteria, like if you have this many species marked, if you have signage, if you have dedicated staff, then you are level 1 through 4 or 1 through 5 arboreta. So that was on one of our goals, one of our lists of things to have done for Hawthorne Hollow by a certain time. So we're really excited to have that certification by the end of the year.
And again, something that takes a lot of work, staff, and a grant. And it sounds
absolutely
like that was very good to get the We Energies grant at the right time.
And with having, you know, we have 90 acres now. And so the arboretum is what we call the arboretum is only really 10 acres of that 90. And so there's so much other tree work to be done. So even though we have that technical arboretum, that designated area, the entire place is really considered an arboretum because we do have trees everywhere. We have the forest trees that are growing naturally, and then we have the more, some of maybe the more exotic or ornamental trees that we have in the arboretum. Not all, but a lot of them. And so there will also be some signage as you're walking the trails of some of our native trees that we have that you'll see. So like, things that come to mind, we have like a shagbark hickory we'll be labeling, we have black cherries, we have maples, we have black walnut, some very good examples of them that are growing wild. So you don't have to go in the arboretum to learn about trees. You can also see it as you're hiking as well.
Okay. We have just about 2 minutes left, and I don't want to leave anything out. So let me first say, have I slipped over anything that is absolutely crucial?
Well, you know, it's been a big year for us so far, and our next big project is putting these signs out, like Kaylin was alluding to, the interpretive signs funded by a grant from the Kenosha Community Foundation.
Ah, great.
We've taken a little bit of time putting these together, but they're made and they're going out this year. So we're looking forward to presenting that and getting the public to come out and take part in walking these trails and, you know, looking at these signs, learning about nature.
You know, it's one of those things where sometimes it's nice to be a best-kept secret because those who hold that secret can really enjoy nature without seeing a lot of other humans running around. But at the same time, it's such a wonderful thing to share, and you're certainly large enough to handle many people enjoying it. So I'm glad to be able to share some of the secret of what's going on in the back, but I hope you're not overwhelmed. Probably never will be. You had mentioned binoculars. Maybe you did. Do you provide any equipment there for checking out for people, or is that something you're not really getting into at
this
point?
We're considering that. But at this time, we don't have that as an option. We've thought about that. We know that other nature centers in the area are kind of doing things like that, too. So it's definitely something that we are messing around with. But at this time, we don't currently have, like, a rental system for people. You know, highly recommend if you do have your own binoculars or you have your own, I don't know, what else. But yeah.
Things to identify plant life or whatever.
Right, guides things like
exactly.
That. Some of those things we do have for sale in the boutique, but at this time we don't have rentals.
Oh, sure. No, makes total sense. Well, I'd really like to thank both of you for joining me today. I know there's even more we could be talking about in greater detail. I don't know how you folks do it all, but it's pretty darn amazing. Today we've been talking with the executive director of Hawthorne Hollow, TJ Levique, and with Kaylin, I'm going to try to pronounce your last name properly, Palomares.
Yes.
And who is the naturalist. And thank you both. You're doing such a wonderful job for the community. We appreciate it. And I'm Jane Herring for Community Matters.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
I'm Gregory Berg, and I hope you'll make a special point of listening to Monday's morning show here on WGTD as I speak with one of the great legends of public radio, Jack Mitchell. He was the very first employee hired by National Public Radio back in 1970 and was the first producer of NPR's All Things Considered. He went on to lead Wisconsin Public Radio as its director with great distinction for more than two decades. We look back on his distinguished career on Monday's morning show beginning just after 8.
In a world filled with possibilities and wonder, we can always find grace in between the music. Join me, Lily Maselli, host of In Between the Music, and enjoy trivia and music together. For dates and times, visit WGTD.org.